Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight number 190. We're recording this on Friday, the 4th of November, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield, hosting the podcast. Ewan Spence is off in America doing something at Blogworld Expo. In the meantime, though, I do have Rafe Blandford.
Hello, everybody.
And I do have David Gilson up in Hull.
Hello, everyone.
Yep, and there's several items of news. The things still chug along quietly and sometimes noisily in the Symbian world. First item of news, the Obby store download limit, which was stuck at 3 initially, which was horrific, then became 5, is now apparently 10, which is kind of breaking news today. And that's good to hear, Rafe. I think so. Now, even serial phone switches like ourselves, where our SIMs get juggled from device to device to device, even with our addictive habits, we can now still never have to buy the same app twice.
Yeah, it's really good to see this come in. I think 10 is probably a reasonable number. Once you get beyond that, I can understand the need for limits from a developer's point of view, because otherwise, theoretically, you could pass one account around amongst a group of friends and just buy the at once. So this seems like a very reasonable limit, because, of course, for most people, you are going to go through maybe one device a year. Maybe more extreme examples, you get through a device a quarter, but that's still going to see you good for a couple of years. And I think if there's an application that's still being used, you know, 2 years on, especially given the pricing we have these days of a couple of pounds each, it seems only reasonable to give the developer another bite of cherry once you've had 10 downloads. So, yeah, nice work from Nokia here. Big thumbs up from me.
Lovely, lovely. I just will remind my fellow podcast recorders to go Do Not Disturb on Skype before my beeping annoys them. Just moving on, our Nokia 700, this is one of the first Bell devices, has been released. And we've done the first two main review parts on All About Symbian. I think it's fair to say that Rafe and I have been fairly impressed by this. It's really, really nice hardware, very, very nice engineering. With the biggest downside, I guess, is the size, and the biggest upside is the size. It's an upside from the point of view of actually appealing to mainstream phone users rather than just hardcore geeks. From a All About Symbian geek standpoint, though, it's just a tiny bit small, really, and you long for something just a bit larger in terms of the 3.5-inch screen of the N8 and the C7, and even the 4-inch screen of the X7 and the E7. Rafe, just a small point for you. Did the specifications on the Nokia 700 say it's got a 3.2-inch screen? I've measured it. It's not. It's 3.1 inches. Do you think I'm being too picky?
Well, yes, you probably are being picky, but it doesn't surprise me because it does feel like a small screen. But as you say, that's kind of its biggest upside and biggest downside. So I think it's quite nice to have this in the range. I suspect as kind of smartphone power users would be rather shocked to try and have to deal with that on a daily basis. But of course, with the way things are going, especially with the Bell handsets and the sort of pricing of this into the mid-tier, you know, for a lot of people, it's not the typical smartphone power user.
Yeah.
If you are a power user, I'd actually say the 700, I mean, I hesitate to say buy a second device and use a second device, but I know a lot of people do. I do think it makes a really nice second device in terms of being really up to date with all the technology, you know, in terms of NFC and all the other bits and pieces. Yet still good value for money and sufficiently differentiated kind of in the physical size and the design that you might be carrying another big handset with you. And for me personally, I wouldn't be at all surprised if I end up carrying something like the 700, possibly with, I should probably buzz out or bleep this word, the Windows Phone Lumia 800, because there's actually good reasons as to why you might want both, which I think we'll probably touch on in a future podcast. But yes, I have rather a soft spot for the 700 because I just like the design of it. But also, it's, you know, the first Bell handset, and Bell will be on the other Symbian 3 handsets in due course. But there's a lot to like about Bell because I do think it maybe simplify things down a bit and makes it quite accessible. So I do think it's a really good mid-tier handset. So, and you reviewed it, I know, looking at the multimedia functions in part two. I think the camera is maybe one of the more disappointing aspects in some sense, but that's a relative term when we're talking about Nokia handsets. But perhaps you could just give us a quick summary of your multimedia findings.
Yes, the camera is interesting because it is a tiny unit, and you can absolutely understand such a tiny little EDOF unit producing some fairly average results. Having said that, I've been reviewing it head-to-head for my phone show, and maybe I'll do a head-to-head table on All About Symbian with the Sony Ericsson Xperia Ray, which is the identical size. And that manages to pack in an 8-megapixel autofocus camera that's actually quite good in the same size unit. So, and I can't really cut Nokia any slack here. I'm hoping that future firmwares, I mean, maybe there's something funny in the firmware, maybe a firmware update can improve the crispness and quality of the photos. So I know there is an element of software processing that goes on. So let's hope that does improve. For actually video playback though, Rafe, I mean, multimedia generally, I think it's quite stunning. If you can live with the fact that screen is 3.1 inches rather than, you know, the big screen devices, it's so crisp. I mean, the pixel density is insane. The clear black display and the AMOLED technology, I mean, it really, really makes videos just pop out. If you can just prop it up on your DT29 or cardboard, in my case, stand that is in front of you on the desk, it's very, very nice video watching experience. And of course, with that front-facing speaker, I mean, the soundtrack of any videos comes across really, really crisply. So I give it a bit of a thumbs up on the multimedia front if you can just live with the camera and hope that that improves.
Yeah, and we should say about this camera, it is all relative. I think for most people, this EDOF technology, which we've talked about many times in the past, is perfectly sufficient. So you're still able to capture decent snaps, especially if you're in good light. But it's probably the only hesitations that people, you know, coming down from something with an autofocus camera might have. And yes, you're right about the size comparison with the Sony Ericsson Ray, although it's worth pointing out, of course, that the 700 has features that the Ray doesn't, in terms of the Pentaband 3G and some of the extra radios and pieces like that. So as always, it's kind of, you know, you look at the options and you make your choice. But the 700, it's actually one of the Bell handsets that is being ranged in the UK. We'll come back to that in a minute as well. And it's on, you know, pretty low contract price. I think you can get it on a 12-month contract for about £20 or £25, and certainly you'll be able to pick one up relatively cheaply in due course. You know, usual price slightly higher at the launch time, but wouldn't be at all surprised to see this drop towards the kind of the £200 price mark SIM free. And certainly if you pick one up second hand or via a good deal, it will dip below that as well, which really is, given all the technology it's got in it, fantastic value for money.
Yeah, I have to say, just throwing my two pence worth on this one, it's I had a very brief hands-on time with it at Nokia World, and yeah, it really does seem like quite a desirable device, and it's because of the size, and just in the hand, just the weight and the size just makes it feel very solid in my hand. And to complement what Steve was saying about how the colours pop out, the new Bell interface, thanks to the processor inside it, it is really snappy and responsive. So I mean, I think that probably for me personally, the camera could be a bit of a deal breaker, but just looking at it and just holding it as you would in a shop, it really did seem quite desirable to me too.
Yeah, of course, having the camera performance being relative, because people are coming from feature phones with pretty rubbish, and of 2 megapixel and 3 megapixel fixed focus cameras, even this 5 megapixel EDOF is going to actually seem pretty decent. So we shouldn't underestimate that factor as well, but I do hope that it will improve. There's more on the 700 coming, by the way. We've got a part 3 of the review, and I've also got a tutorial on Symbian Bell, and I'm sure there's more coming as we have more and more Bell handsets in. And also as Bell arrives on the main Symbian 3 phones, of course, over the next month or two. There's the 600, which is also running Bell, Rafe. That's now been, Nokia decided not to, quote, ship it to markets. Should anyone be really disappointed?
Well, yes, in a sense, because I think it represented even better value for money in some senses, because it had the NFC in the good screen, the Pentaband 3G, FM transmitter and pieces like that. Big speaker. I mean, when it was launched, it was termed the loudest smartphone. I suspect we'll be seeing that speaker in some of the other devices, just as with the 701 being the brightest screen. That same screen's actually in the 603, which we'll get to again in a minute. But yes, the 600 has effectively been cancelled. We did have a few comments that it has been available in the Philippines, so we're not sure of the exact status, but I think it's probably fair to say this isn't going to be shipping in significant numbers. And, you know, not shipping to markets is Nokia language for "we've cancelled this." Why have they done that? Well, Nokia talk about aligning their portfolio, making it streamlined, blah blah blah, but what that really means, I think, is that there wasn't enough of a difference between something like the Nokia 600 and then the 603 above it, which of course got announced sort of 6 weeks later, and the Nokia 500, which preceded it. If you look at the pricing of those, there's actually only a €20 difference to the 603, and the 603 has a bigger screen and, at least to my mind, a better design. It's slightly slimmer, it feels more robust in the hand. The 600 was more kind of a variation of the the 500 design, which with those lower cost handsets, you know, it's they can be the plastic materials and they just feel slightly cheaper in the hand. The build quality overall is generally quite good, but as I say, not a big enough difference. And so, you know, when it comes down to it, operators look at these phones and which ones should we decide to range. And I suspect most of them opted for either the 500 or the 603 over the 600. So it no longer became economically viable for Nokia to release this handset. I think a few people looking at specs might be a bit disappointed because the 600, as I said, had things like the FM transmitter, which neither the 500 or the 603 have, I believe. But for most people, they aren't really going to notice any significant difference, and they'll be picking up a 603, which is, say, slightly more expensive, or the 500, which is significantly cheaper. You know, it comes in about 30 or 40 euros cheaper, which when we're talking about a handset that's costing, you know, 150 euros, you know, we're talking 25% off. So it is a big amount.
Yeah, of course, if people want the FM transmitter, there is the C7 and there's the 701, and plus, of course, things like the N8 higher up the range. So there's plenty of other options if people want that functionality. On the 603, Rafe, I mean, we all saw it at the show. I'm actually quite impressed by it. Are we going to get that one in for review?
We should be getting this one in for review in due course. I guess it started shipping now, so look out for it soon. But yes, I was actually really very impressed by this handset. I talked just earlier about the kind of the plastic feel of some of these cheaper devices, and the 603 really bucks the trend in that regard. I mean, it's quite slim, but it also feels very solid. It is made from plastics, but it feels much more kind of like a one-piece handset, and the screen's absolutely gorgeous on it. It is the 3.5 inches. I said it's the same one as the 701, so it really pops out. And for a device that's priced, I think it's 200 euros or so, really quite remarkable, and it still has the Pentaband 3G, the kind of graphics acceleration. So it's essentially the same specification with a few differences, obviously, than the higher end Bell handsets. So I suspect this could well end up being kind of the hero handset for Symbian Bell. Maybe not so much attention in the Western markets. It may not even ship in some of the European markets, but I think it's going to do really well in China. And I was talking to one of the product managers at the show about this, and they said, actually, we think this is going to be a key market, a key product in China, particularly in the secondary markets. And people tend to look at China and sort of think Beijing or some of the big cities, and said, but actually the biggest market is kind of the secondary cities outside Beijing, and Beijing more follows the Western markets, or kind of, you know, there, you'll get Android devices, you'll get iPhone and everything else. But in the sort of secondary cities, which is anything up to, we're talking a billion people, so yeah, a very large market, Symbian is still, you know, very dominant, and people like the robustness, they like the power efficiency and all those kind of characteristics we've talked about in the past. And the 603 is really a bit mind-boggling in that regard, in that it feels like it should be more expensive than it actually is. And I, as I said, I think that's one of the reasons the 600 has kind of been displaced, if you will.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I really, really like the 603, and I could see myself, you know, picking one up for kind of casual use almost. I mean, it is good enough to sort of stand against something like the 701 and even some of the first generation Symbian 3 handsets. And when you consider that, given that it is, you know, we're talking a price point of 200 euros before tax and subsidies, that's a pretty impressive achievement.
Yeah, talking of the 701, any chance of getting that in for review?
Well, it's going to be a bit tricky because it's not being ranged in the UK and quite a few other European markets. It is being ranged out in Asia. I know it's in, I think, India, China, the Philippines, and a couple of other markets out there. So it's a bit tricky for us to get it in for review. For those that don't know, you know, we'll be reliant most of the time for loan handsets on Nokia UK comms, and if they're not ranging it in the UK, they tend not to get the devices themselves. But we'll persevere, and actually we're going to buy one on the commercial market so we can bring you the review and all the details of that. So watch out for that in the next fortnight or so.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Also, let's be complete about this, Rafe. The 500, we've now got this in, haven't we?
I have. It's arrived just yesterday, and it's sitting on my desk awaiting review. Yes, it's the lowest cost handset. It's the 150 euro one, which, you know, going back a few years, it's sort of, I am still staggered when a sort of Symbian smartphone comes in at that price. I can't say too much about it because I haven't really tried it yet, but it is, as I hinted at earlier, kind of that plastic materials, it does obviously feel cheaper and the specifications are cut down. From a technical point of view, it's quite interesting because it is using a slightly different chipset and system on a chip combination. We'll talk more about that in the review. For example, there's no graphics acceleration, so there's some interesting questions to ask about performance and that kind of thing.
But this is, say, it's an equivalent to the old 5530 in the Symbian Bell range.
Yes, I suppose you could say that. It is actually quite a bit cheaper than that handset. I mean, yes, it's the 5530, the C503, those kind of handsets. And it's actually similar in design, I would say, to the C503. But obviously it does have some updated bits and pieces in it. I suspect it's less glamorous than, you know, the Bell handsets that have been announced. But nonetheless, the price point of this one does make it interesting, just because it is really breaking new ground for Nokia smartphones. So we will be looking at this one in a bit more detail as well. Again, that should be sometime in the next fortnight that we have our content starting on that. I'll try and give it a first impressions, first look next week.
Lovely. Okay. Now, all the Symbian 3 phones we did see at Nokia World, I did put up a mention on the site in my editorial. They did all have Bell loaded, which is quite impressive, really. And it kind of gives the clue, Rafe, that Symbian Bell will be rolling out as an update over the air and via Nokia Suite, probably, I would say, around about a month's time. So we're looking end of November, start of December.
Yeah, I mean, Nokia said when Bell was announced that it would rolled out to the existing handsets by the end of the year. So I think December is probably a good guess. You never know, there might be some slip. There is obviously some technical challenges to overcome to get Bell onto these handsets. They are running slightly slower processors and in particular less RAM. And actually, yeah. Steve wrote a great editorial on that this week. And go and read that on the site. But as he said, we saw them all running it at Nokia World. So it's obviously, it's been done. I suspect it's now in testing and kind of quality control, and it has to be signed off by all the operators, of course. We will obviously cover this in more detail, and we actually have the handsets running Bell ourselves in terms of talking about, are there any performance implications. But certainly based on what I saw, there wasn't really a slowdown on the device. In fact, if anything, I think they were running slightly faster than Symbian Anna, and the new UI looks very good. I'm looking forward to getting it on the N8 and the E7 in particular, because I think it adds a modern flavour in terms of the look and feel. When you're comparing it to the Anna update, there's visually a very big change in Bell. There's maybe less to talk about under the hood, whereas Symbian Anna was as much a performance update with some small UI changes as well, the keyboard, the portrait keyboard being the big one there. But yes, I was rather impressed to see Bell running on so many of these Symbian Anna handsets or Symbian 3 handsets, and very stable as well too. David, did you have a chance to play with Bell on some of the existing hardware?
Yes, I played on a pink Nokia NA, and no, that isn't a euphemism. yeah, it actually felt really snappy, and it was as if it was new hardware actually. So I love the way that everything's been done. And actually, something I mentioned to you, Rafe, at the time, I think that the real like silent hero feature that's going to get no press at all, but it's perhaps going to be one of the most useful things, isn't on the home screen at all. It's that you can actually resort the app menu alphabetically, and we've never been able to do that on Symbian, and it's such a trivial yet handy thing to do. It'll make things so much easier to find.
Yeah, that's right. Steve mentioned this in the first part of his 700 review. So yes, you've got this alphabetical sort list, and I can hear people groaning in the background saying, oh, but I want my apps how I organise them. But the good news is you basically get to choose an either or option. You can have it alphabetical or choose it back to your own preference. So kind of a best of both worlds. And again, you also get the choice between the grid and the list, as you always have in Symbian. But I will say with Bell, because of the kind of very smooth scrolling and the fast performance, putting it into a list suddenly becomes a slightly more interesting choice. And I know a lot of people who have come up from Series 40 actually use Symbian with that app grid, not as a grid, but as a list. And I do wonder in Bell whether more people might do that, especially with this alphabetical option coming in, which makes it pretty quick to get through things. I suspect the power users are going to go back and keep using it how they always have done, just as they'll be adding folders in, because Bell by default does not put applications into folder. Everything's on the home screen, on the sort of one screen. Again, that's really because it's very quick at scrolling through all of those applications. But for me, this was one of the highlights of Nokia World, seeing Bell running on so many of these handsets. I mean, maybe we've become a little bit too sceptical about how these things happen, but Nokia actually is starting to build up a pretty decent track record in the software update department. I know there are some people who are still frustrated by not having got Anna on their handsets, but the Americans and the Australians did get Anna. I think it was the week of Nokia World that came out. So the vast majority of people have now got Symbian Anna as an update option on their Symbian 3 handsets. So I would imagine now that that's almost done, the sort of hard workers in the update factory, wherever it happens to be, will be turning their attention to Bell. So hopefully we'll start seeing that appear in due course, as Steve estimated. I think it might be towards mid or end of December, but we'll just have to wait and see. We will, of course, report it as soon as it happens on allaboutsymbian.com.
And anyone who is feeling ever so slightly curmudgeonly about wanting to stick with how they're doing their application organisation in their Symbian funds, it's just a little bit of food for thought. I mean, what we were just saying about putting things in alphabetical order, I've actually have done, at one point, I've done this manually, which and it's not an easy thing to do, but the idea is that I think if you have application shortcuts on your home screen, it's a waste of space. That's what we've got the app grid for. So what my ideal setup would be is actually to press the application menu and have a grid of my 11 most frequently used applications plus one folder that everything else gets dumped into, and then having that sorted alphabetically would be really useful.
Oh, you're so old school, David. That was last year. Get with the times. Anyway, one thing, Rafe, that occurred to me. Symbian Bell has been leaked to the backwaters of the internet onto various people's N8s, and they're reporting it runs, for example, multiple HD games at the same time, implying that there is some sort of improvement to memory management, a RAM management, under the hood. Can you confirm that?
I can't actually confirm it officially, but, yeah, I've seen the same thing. So it's entirely possible that what they've done is implemented sort of, it sounds to me like demand paging, but for things that it's actually stored on the C drive or the E drive. Kind of currently in Symbian, it's only really used on the ROM. And what demand paging does, it kind of pages things into memory, into RAM when you need them from currently ROM storage, but obviously with these reports perhaps indicating it's coming from C and or E, which is the kind of inbuilt memory or the flash memory. I can't obviously confirm this because there's no way of being absolutely sure about this, but that's to me what those reports suggest, which would actually mean that it would solve some of the performance issues, because what demand paging does, it kind of just loads into RAM stuff when you need it rather than having it running all the time. Kind of the end result of that is that you need less RAM to do things. So in this particular instance, what it would be doing is it would have in RAM the current game that you're using, and then when you switch to the other game, it would demand page that game into RAM so you could then start using that one. It all obviously happens seamlessly and without you knowing about it. That would be my guess. We'll try and get some official confirmation of that, because if it is, that's a pretty significant performance update, and actually one of the more significant updates under the hood that we'll have seen in Symbian for some time.
And so although Anna was deemed or termed a performance update, in actual fact, I think Bell actually will provide a bigger performance update. I think that even on the 680 megahertz processor of the N8 with its 256 megabytes of RAM, as with all the sort of Symbian 3 brethren, I think they'll actually run faster with Bell than they did with Anna.
Yeah, it's difficult to tell, because drawing these kind of benchmarks is very difficult, especially as we don't have the handsets to compare side by side. One of the reasons Bell feels faster is because obviously it's using more Qt and QML for the UI, and that's been very carefully optimized. So that's where some of the performance improvements are coming from. When I talked about the updates in Anna, they had similar memory and processor tweaks going on, which is why that felt faster. Where do you draw the most significant line? I would still say Anna probably had more stuff going on under the hood. We'll have to wait and see on Bell, but we'll be testing that in due course.
Yeah. Of course, the Nokia 5800 received something like 2.5 years worth of updates, and it's still going on. I still wouldn't rule out any further updates. So, and we're only a year into things like the N8 and E7 and C7. So I'd expect another full year of updates to Symbian Bell and Symbian Bell service packs going right through most of 2012, which is really good news for the Symbian world.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was definitely confirmed at Nokia World, I mean, we'd already been told about this, there is going to be another Symbian update, and it'll be Symbian C something. Actually, the name has leaked out for those that really want to go and find out about it. And that's going to be another substantial update. Obviously, there aren't any details on that, just the fact that it exists, and it will probably happen, I would imagine, sometime in the first half of 2012, or at least get announced, and then maybe be on devices a little while after that, because there are some more Symbian 3 devices to come. As we keep saying, it's far from over, and there are It's not clear exactly how many handsets to come, but there's certainly a significant range still to come. And there's definitely the possibility of a high-end Symbian 3 handset still to be announced. So we'll watch this space because there's lots and lots of activity to come.
Lovely, lovely. Now, David, can you be rather briefly, give us the good news on Opera? Apparently, there's a reason to update Mini and Mobile.
Yes, be very quick. Opera Mini is up to version 6.5. Opera Mobile is up to version 11.5 for Symbian and Miga. And there's a whole bunch of under-the-hood features. Two features that I think people will want to pay attention to is that Opera Mobile now supports reading the bookmarks from your Symbian web browser. So that actually is interesting if you are thinking of moving onto a Windows Phone device, because there is Opera Link on Windows Phone, which will sync with your bookmarks, and you can and on the Symbian bookmarks view in Opera Mobile, you can actually tap an import button, which will copy them all into your Opera Link account. So it does actually give you a migration path from Symbian to Windows Phone. And another option is, we know about Opera Turbo, which is crudely, the proxy acceleration option for Opera Mobile. That now has a new option. It's no longer just on or off. You can also have it so that it only works when you're on a cellular data connection and switches off when you're on Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's very clever. Yeah. And it's a nice way of getting your bookmarks from Symbian Web right through to other browsers on other platforms. Opera are really good at this sort of stuff, so I think well done to them. You can get those programs by going to m.opera.com in your in web browser on your Symbian device. Talking of updates, these ones are not quite available yet, but they're coming over the next few months in two phases. This is Microsoft Office apps. Now, part of the agreement between Microsoft and Nokia early in the year was that there will be extra software and working hard on, even on Symbian, there'll be extra tie-ups. Rafe, you've got the first phase of these is coming this year. Will it actually all come into the Bell devices? Will it also come to the existing Symbian 3 devices?
It will come to the existing Symbian 3 devices if you upgrade them to Bell. So basically, it's a set of apps it's specifically for Bell, but you will have to have Bell running in order to get these. And it's going to be delivered as an over-the-air software update to all of those handsets. And we were told this is going to be by the end of this year. And yes, you're right, there's two phases. There's OneNote, Link, PowerPoint Broadcaster and Microsoft Document Connection. We actually talked about those earlier in the year when this was first announced, but they were being demoed at Nokia World. But perhaps even more interestingly, being demoed at Nokia World for the very first time, as far as I'm aware, are the early beta versions of the native versions of Microsoft Word, Excel and PowerPoint. Now, these are promised for the first half of 2012.
This is
the second phase, yes. And it's what's going to replace Quick Office as kind of the default Office document handler on the Symbian handset. So, you know, for your email attachments or for anything that you load on via USB or any other method. It also has support for Microsoft SharePoint. So it's actually going to mean there's a very strong set of enterprise applications on Symbian Bell. Really, the only thing that gets close is Windows Phone itself. And actually, Symbian Bell has some things that currently Windows Phone doesn't have. Pretty impressive solution all round. I only got to look at these very briefly in terms of kind of running them on the phone. It was running around the show floor, and actually have to say thank you to the one of the people who's looking after this particular product. Actually came over to me and said, I want to show you this. So a big thank you to him from the podcast. And so, for example, some of the things that are unique or an update, I would say, from QuickOffice, the performance seems much better. Excel now has support for charts. That's something we haven't seen before. So these are coming more in line with the Office solutions you see on other platforms. PowerPoint has support for transitions on the phone itself. Word, you can actually use a review mode and add comments to a document. So if you're passing a document back and forth, that's particularly important. No doubt there's a whole other list of changes, and they're all using the kind of the Bell UI look and feel. And so they feel like up-to-date modern applications, and the performance certainly that I saw was pretty impressive. So I'm really looking forward to these coming onto the Symbian Bell handsets. And as I say, it will mean that these Bell handsets are pretty powerful from an enterprise point of view, because, you know, the phase one update, kind of OneNote and Link, are both important, PowerPoint Broadcaster. I should also say that we were told back in September when that announced that Exchange is going to be able to support multiple accounts with when this update comes in. So yes, phase one is due by the end of this year. It will be delivered through software update over the air, and then phase two we've got less certain on the date, but we'll bring you more information on that when it happens, and then as we find out more about the new versions. But I think it's a pretty big deal, actually. It's the first time Microsoft have written a mobile version of Office for something other than their own platform, so it's a real Philip in Bell's cap, and a good example of how the partnership between Nokia and Microsoft extends beyond Windows Phone.
We may be going all Microsofty, but I still love my Apple Mac. I mean, random thought of the day, time spot on the podcast. This is, but I did a little link of interest to an article by Vaibhav Sharma on the Handheld blog, talking about the mess, the quote mess Nokia have made of Nokia Map Suite in terms of taking what was once a single application, Nokia Maps, and it's now turned into ten separate icons: maps, weather, check-in, drive, map loader, guides, pulse, live view, public transport, and places. All of which are now, if you follow the Maps beta version, they're all part of Nokia Maps and Nokia Map Suite. And the Vaibhav very sensibly says, look, this should be reduced to two or three, maybe four at a pinch. And he lists his suggestion, which I think is rather good. I've got an even better suggestion. This is my random thought of the day, Rafe and David. Now, I think what's the one thing that happens when you start Nokia Maps is you have to wait. Okay, you wait, understandably, while it loads all its megabytes of data. You wait while it connects to the internet. You wait while the GPS powers up, while the GPS acquires a satellite lock. Basically, you start Nokia Maps, and for the good first 10 seconds, whatever you're doing in it, you have to wait. And that's fine. It also has to sign in as your Nokia stroke of a username. That takes time. So you hit the icon, and then while it's doing all this, you can think, now, what do I actually want to do? What's the best way of doing it in Nokia Maps? You know roughly what you want to do by the time it's ready. But the current way of doing it with these 10 separate icons is you have to know what you want to do and waste time thinking about it. Then, okay, well, I actually want to check into that service and let so-and-so know where I am. I'm going to use Pulse, or I'm going to use Check-in, or I'm going to Maps. And then, having spent 10 seconds thinking about it and chosen the icon, you then have to wait the extra 10 seconds while it starts. Wouldn't it be a good idea just to have one icon, Nokia Maps, it does everything, and let it do all its startup while you have your own human thinking time? Thoughts?
I'm not sure I agree. I kind of like the fact that it's gone multi-icon, because I can get into the bit I want very quickly. I think actually this is a kind of a product of the fact that the app model is in one sense broken. For when you get a really big app that has loads of functionality, having multiple entry points into it does kind of make sense, because generally you're wanting to perform one specific task. So, you know, it's not like a PC application where you open it up and you start working, you're doing various things. Very often, you know, you've got something very specific in mind when you go into it. And so I can understand why they've done it. It also, I think, advertises the functionality that's available. Otherwise, there's a danger that you just see this Nokia Maps icon and you think, it can't do everything that I want it to do. So, you know, it kind of, I guess, is, we've talked about this before, taking applications out of their silo. It's this kind of approach. And honestly, the fact it takes 10 seconds to load is actually a bit of a problem I have with it. I would really like to see it loading a lot more quickly. And so, you know, putting in sort of choosing your application during that 10-second period is, I know, because already there's something wrong with having that 10-second load in the first place. And I know one of the reasons they've kind of cut down the number, gone to the multi-application approach, is that they can load just the bits they need for that specific functionality, and in that sense cut down on the waiting time. So I wonder how big it would, you know, the wait times would get if you had everything under one. But yes, I think there's an argument to be made both ways, and it'll be interesting to see which way eventually gets adopted. I have a sneaking suspicion that Map Suite is probably the state of things to come. We might get a sort of quasi version of what you suggest, in that it will, you'll tap a single icon and then it'll open up a folder with all of these things in it.
Which is how I've done mine at the moment.
Which I'm not surprised to hear, because that's similar to the arrangement I have. You know, I have a shortcut on my home screen that goes into all of this functionality, and I'm honestly perfectly happy with that. But, you know, kind of beyond that, it's more of a problem with the application model, especially when you have these big applications that have multiple functionality. I mean, I'd actually draw a comparison to something like Quick Office or any kind of Office functionality, whereby, you know, you often have to choose between which application you want, and actually the way Quick Office has done it, and most Office on mobile choose to do it, is have one icon that drops you into a file list and you then go from there. And that obviously makes sense for files, but even then, it's a slightly broken model, I would say. So it's, yeah, food for thought definitely there. I enjoyed both the piece you linked to because I think that had some interesting ideas. And I know the Maps team, of all of the Nokia teams, they spend a lot of their time reading this kind of stuff. So I'm sure they'll take your feedback on board. And it'd be interesting to see which choice they make, because ultimately, you know, different people want different things, and they tend to go for what's best for kind of the average user, which doesn't always satisfy the power user. So I suspect they'll end up with some grumpy power users, but happy ordinary users.
Yeah, I was interested to see the way they did it on Windows Phone. Sorry to break the platform focus free.
But beep.
On Windows Phone, they've done it as a Nokia Maps, as a with all the underlying places of interest and reviews and look up things, and then they have a separate application stroke icon for Nokia Drive. In other words, recognizing that if you're in your car and you want to get somewhere in a hurry, you just want to get straight into Drive, straight to destination. You don't want any of the other functions getting in your way, which I think is a useful way of doing it. I think that's the same on the Nokia N9 as well, running Migo. So maybe they'll go down that road, whereby there's a quick start, Drive, get going, get to my destination, and then there's another icon which gets you to a folder with all the extra functions. So
I think that's an interesting approach, and I will mention Beep again. I think they have the live tile approach, which allows deep linking into an application, which does offer a potential solution, and it's not something they've implemented yet. And actually, I'd like to see a similar thing on Symbian in terms of a shortcut. So when you think about Drive, more often than not, you're actually wanting to drive home, well, 50% of the time for the most part. So I would quite like to see a shortcut that was just a Drive Me Home button. You get in the car, you press that, and you go... it just drops you straight into home and starts you navigating with a single touch. And that's where something like a Windows Phone's live tile approach, where you kind of can pin a tile to the start screen from within an application, it kind of is a deep link, works very well. And that, as I say, is kind of getting away from the application silo model. And something like Maps is one of these things that can benefit from it. But it doesn't, you know, it's not by any means restricted to Windows Phone. You could see a similar functionality on Symbian if you maybe had a flexible widget that the Maps team could come up with, something you put on the home screen that allowed access to these functions, or maybe choose your favourite ones. You have your four favourite functions, you know, easy shortcuts on the home screen. I think that's perhaps the solution I'd like to see.
If you have a Drive Me Home button, of course, Ray, you'd have to tie it in, I think, with an extra sensor in the phone, a blood analyzer, which said, you tap Drive Me Home and it says, sorry, your alcohol level is far too high. I'm calling the cops or similar. Drive Me Home, good idea. Sorry for my rant. I just thought I'd have a random thought to finish the podcast on a chatty note. We are out of time. It's a big thank you, as always, to Rafe Blandford.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you to David Gilson.
Thanks, everyone, and I'll share my opinions about Maps next time.
Sorry to cut you off. Anyways, you can find us at allaboutsymbian.com, at AAS on Twitter. We'll catch you next week on the All About Symbian Insight podcast.